Hey, Clint. I know your team is in the middle of a do-or-die stretch, probably their third or fourth do-or-die stretch of the year, right? But you might want to take heed of a few things. Neil brought up Kevin Newman for you to use right before a series against four left-handed starting pitchers. I'm sure you knew that. And I'm also sure that you know how well Newman has hit left-handed pitching in his career to date. I know, you're probably sick and damn tired of watching sloppy defense hurt you time and again. So let's roll Danny out there, which is fine. But hey, how about getting Newman at second? That's Harrison's spot, sure. But you have to know, Clint, that Jay Hay has not had an OPS on base plus slugging of 700 or greater since June 24th. Almost 2 full months. And I'll defer to you on that. But I'll refer you to Adam Frazier, who has the second highest wOBA on the club since coming back up on July 25th. That's 424, only .001 behind David Freese, who leads. And while we're on the subject of Freeze, I'll give you credit for that one, Clint. Colin Moran simply doesn't have it yet, and you're wringing every last bit of baseball out of the 35-year-old. This can probably be considered one spot in which your love for veteranosity has won the day. But back to Frazier for a second. He gets a walk-off today for you. Will he sit tomorrow? Because certainly that has been something of an MO of yours for a while now. I suppose if Sean were still here, he would be penciled in to start tomorrow. Sean is a fantastic guy. And speaking personally as someone who's gotten to know his father a bit from my time covering Johnny Rodriguez's minor league teams, he has baseball in his blood. But unfortunately, his past 2 seasons have been, he simply cannot be a part of your team's regular lineup if you want to get into the postseason. It's my hope and the hope of many others that he does not play a significant number of innings for you over these last 6 weeks. And speaking of these last 6 weeks, there's a lot of people out there who have many hopes and expectations of you, Clint, but they're not asking for much. They're asking for you to be a bit more aggressive, maybe pinch hitting for Ivan Nova after he's hurled 5 innings. And remember, your team has a fantastic bullpen, so why not? And we're asking you for they're asking for you to use that bullpen in a way to maximize it. Yes, Vasquez is the 9th inning guy, and we know better than to try to change your mind there. But mix and match guys a little more, maybe. You know, maybe put on Kella a little earlier. Maybe go to Crick a little earlier. Get the outs to keep you in the game or to shorten the game. They're asking for you to hold some guys accountable. You know, Marte might have been able to break up some of those 127 some odd double plays by running hard, or he might have forced a close play at first by not dogging it today. What are you going to do about that, Clint? Dickerson and Polanco are in slumps. Why not shuffle them around in the lineup like you've done successfully for many others before? Be proactive and not reactive. They may not want you to be as much of a player's manager as you have been throughout your Pirates career. And maybe that means when Sean does come back, don't play him as much. It could also mean putting Cervelli in at first over Bell more often if Bell struggles again. It could mean anything. But they want you to be a perfect combination of a player's coach and someone who pushes the right buttons. And that's not entirely fair. You know, it's not fair for any MLB manager, but we want you to push the right buttons without fear or hesitation. We want you to rely on the analytics, but not to the detriment of your gut. And, you know, vice versa. And it's not fair. I know. Being an MLB manager never is. The seat isn't quite hot yet, Clint, but don't be the cause of the rising temperature. Okay, and with that being said, welcome to the latest episode of Locked On Pirates, your Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. My name is Jason Rollison. You can find me these days primarily on the pages of bucks.gov.com and on this here podcast. So, the Pirates have just split a 4-game series with the Cubs. If you want to take the score on aggregate, I think they would have won the series 5-3, but a couple of hard luck 1-0 losses followed by a couple of interesting wins. And it took a great start from Joe Musgrove and a walk-off home run by Adam Frazier today to get there. So as it stands right now, the Pirates are still clinging to postseason hopes with 6 games back of the wild card. And if we take a quick peek at what's coming up, they have a crucial 6 games against the Braves and 3 against the Brewers, and then 3 more against the Cardinals, and the Brewers and the Cardinals are away. So this, I think, is why the Pirates were looking to maybe get their starters some extra rest, because these games with teams directly in front of them might mean a little more to their internal analytics, right or wrong. Part of that is Jameson Taillon, who really played well today. I wanted to touch on him for a moment. We're going to have some audio from Neil Huntington's press conference to round out this podcast. But before I get there, I want to talk about Taillon for a second. Looked pretty sharp today overall, I would think, except for the three walks. He had 18 swinging strikes, which was his highest total of the year, and I believe, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I think that might have been the highest for his career as well. And that's what I'm going to talk about Taillon specifically tonight, because as well as he's pitched, and he's pitched very damn well over the past month or two, month and a half at least, there's still a part of his game that can develop. And I think that's the strikeout ability. We've seen games from him where he can post double-digit strikeouts. We've also seen games where he's not missing many bats. I think once he has a full season with a slider under his belt, which he pitched pretty well, threw pretty well today, I think next year you might see a fully developed Taillon, a fully realized Taillon. Tough day to talk today. But there's a school of thought that says, especially on the Pittsburgh Pirates, if you don't need to miss many bats, if you just get outs, you're getting outs. Well, in today's baseball, I really think that some more strikeout ability would not hurt anyone, especially Taillon. And if you compare that with getting consistently good soft contact, I think he'll be pretty much realized into that number one starter than many think he could have been, could be. So again, just wanted to touch base on that briefly. Something to watch for over the last 6 weeks of the season and the next four or five starts from Taillon. Okay, so what we're going to do now is bring you, courtesy of 93.7 The Fan, who had it up on their website. Here's the full audio from Neil Huntington's media availability today. So we'll get out of here on that, and hope to talk to you more this week. Last week on the podcast, kind of had a kind of hectic schedule that prevented me from putting out a podcast as much as I would like. Shout out to Alex Stumpf and Noah Hiles for still bringing you a River Blast podcast, which just gets better and better. But hoping to give a little more consistency this week with Lockdown Pirates. So before we get to Neil Huntington's comments, I want to ask you, if you like the show, please consider rating it, reviewing it on iTunes, or telling a friend. That's the best way you can help us grow. So here are Neil Huntington's comments from today's Sunday availability. We'll talk to you next time on Locked On Pirates.
We're getting a lot of questions, as I'm sure you already have, about Kevin Newman. What's the strategy in bringing him up not to play? Usually when you guys bring up prospects, it's to get playing time. Obviously, you guys like Echevarria, but why not somebody else if you're looking for a bench player here?
Sure. One, Echevarria is an above-average major league defender with some bat that has done a nice job for us so far. Two, this gives Kevin Newman a quick snapshot of the big leagues and the speed of the game, and every at-bat or every inning he gets on defense or pinch run opportunity. Given it's near the end of the AAA season, he's put in a really good year down there. We felt like this was a good opportunity to give him a quick taste of the big leagues while Jordy's down. He is going to get some playing time up here, but I think we're missing that Echevarria is an above-average major league shortstop. We're six games out of a wild card spot fighting for our playoff lives, and I've worked with Clint to give him complete confidence and support to put out there the lineup that we feel can give us the best chance to win a game on a nightly basis.
How much was the depth, the pitching depth, the upper levels of the minors, even the lower levels, kind of contribute to being able to depart with Boz in the Archer deal?
Yeah, it was not an easy decision. It was about Chris Archer and the three-plus years where he can help us be better and help us win games and in our minds be a postseason caliber contender. And the belief that with the extra picks, the belief that the Nick Kinghams and the Tyler Glasnows and the Chad Cools and the Trevor Williams that are second through, I guess, ninth-rounders in that group, that we can create a good major league starting pitcher. Mitch Keller wasn't a first-round pick from that group, whereas the opportunity to add a Chris Archer, we have very limited windows to add a pitcher of that caliber. So it was not an easy decision. We gave up a lot, but we felt like we got a lot in return.
Neil, with Chris Archer, how hard is it when you're talking early returns, the first 16 games, I think, since the trade, to see people compare him and Glasnow and know that Glasnow got off to a good start and Archer isn't where he's wanted to be yet? How much do you see that maybe the fans feel like there's a buyer's remorse, maybe not so much on your end, but just to see the reaction? What's that like? Because you talked about this being more of a three-year window of a deal. Is that how you judge deals like this after 3 years?
We do. I mean, we're excited for Tyler. That his first three starts, I think, went really well over there, and faced a good Boston club. As basically every pitcher that's faced Boston has had some challenges with them. But this is not about these 10 starts that Chris will make for us this year. This is about the 3+ years that Chris will make us better. Will give us a legitimate, top of the rotation type starter. Again, if you go back, and I understand even the criticisms of Chris's ERA over the last 2 years, you go back through and you you look at the strikeouts, and I think he's in the top five in baseball, top 10 in baseball over the last two plus years, which are his down years. He's in the top five in baseball in strikeouts. He's in the top 10 to 12 in innings. And if you look at ERA proxies, which are the more advanced analytics, he's one of the top 12 pitchers in baseball over the last two plus years, which are kind of his down years. So we're working forward to getting him back to where the ERA matches the proxy ERA. The indicator ERA, and looking forward to him helping us win a lot of games here over the next three plus years. And again, we knew we were giving up a pitcher with ceiling and Tyler Glass now, and want Tyler to go do well, want Austin to go do well, want Shane to go do well. But what our focus is what we got in return, and how do we turn Chris loose in the National League and have him be a mainstay for us in this rotation.
Did you think there would be an adjustment for him in coming into the National League in terms of dealing with different size ballparks, the pitcher in the lineup? Maybe some more power hitters in some of those lineups in your division in particular?
Chris is a competitor, and we've seen some really good in the first three starts, and we've seen some things that we're going to allow us to help him, and he's going to take that next step here soon.
When you look at Jordy and Echeverria reaching free agency after this year, does Newman being here, maybe not so much now, but possibly when rosters expand, give you any kind of snapshot as to what you might be looking at the shortstop position next year or even middle infield, depending on what you do?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Newman's certainly an option for us as we look at where we see this middle infield going rest of this year and into the future. Part of the reason to bring him now is to give him that snapshot, to let him see what August baseball looks like, because while we anticipate and are working toward fighting for our playoff lives in September and working to make the postseason come October, September baseball is a tough time to evaluate a player. If your team's out of it and you're playing a lot of other teams that are out of it, you're facing more 4A type young major league players than you are major leaguers. Now, we have a stretch in September that, if it doesn't go the way we want this to go, we'll still be facing teams battling for playoff spots. But this is a good stretch for him to come up and to see some playoff caliber baseball and, again, gain some valuable experience in a bat at a time, an inning at a time, and a start at a time. But we also want to respect what Echeverria has done defensively and the impact that he can make on a club defensively and contribute with the bat. And that's that delicate balance we're working through right now.
Would you prefer like a Barmer-Smurser kind of apprenticeship for Kevin, or is he one of those rare kids who could step in as a rookie next year and be an everyday guy?
Well, he's a very even-keeled guy. He's very intelligent. His skills play fairly consistently. It's a short swing. It's a compact swing. It's a steady, reliable defender. The Barmas to Jordy scenario was ideal, and it was great to have a veteran defensive shortstop that was willing to mentor and wanted to mentor and took pride in that. And so there could be a scenario in which that could work out. If it doesn't work out, now part of it worked out because of the contract and things with Barmas worked out well. Jordy's timing to the big leagues worked out well with that. There's some other variables that go involved in it. Is it something we're open to? Yes. Is it something that we feel is absolutely necessary? Not necessarily.
What is the interplay of your infield defense going forward as it relates to your pitching philosophy off the mound, especially with starters? For a long time, the success was great defense behind pitch to ground balls. But you've added some more swing and miss guys, Archer, Musgrove. Does that affect, or how does that interplay with your infield defense and your philosophy on that?
Well, we still want good defenders, especially up the middle at shortstop, and we want guys that if the ball's hit to them, it's an out. And if we position them well, we're going to get some more balls than theoretically we're supposed to. Now, you position well and have plus range, that's the best of all, and plus reliability, that's the best of all worlds. So, you take a look at what you have available, you take a look at what you have access to, and you work to put your best team out there. But we do. We do value defense, especially at shortstop, especially at catcher. And if you're more of an offensive second baseman, you really need to be able to hit. There's no doubt about that.
As you monitor pitcher workload this time of year, how do you do that? How do you gauge that with Jameson and with Joe Musgrove, who both had some unique circumstances last year? How do you gauge what kind of workload you're going to let them have the rest of this season?
Yeah, a lot of it is the art of pitcher workload and how are they appearing, how are they responding, how are they recovering, how are they pitching, how are they competing. We have rough ideas about increased thresholds, But there is no science to it. It's much more anecdotal. It's much more art than science at this point in time. So we want to see how they're recovering. We want to see how they're pitching. We want to see how they're feeling. And we also don't want to pull the plug too quickly. But we also don't want to run them out there more than we should. So there is some working through it. In Jameson's case, we're not just talking about year to year. He's taken some innings in the past, and so we don't want to just get stuck on, well, this is what he had last year. In Joe's case as well, well, Joe pitched three quarters of the year in the bullpen, but he has taken some starts in the past. So we want to intelligently increase the pitch count, and it's not just innings, but it's pitch count. We want to understand the stress load of those pitches as well. 105 pitches over 7 innings is very different than 105 pitches over 3 innings. 105 pitches over a 1-0 game is very different than an 11-0 game. So we're trying to factor all of that into the equation as we look to put our guys in the position to finish strong and be ready to go again next year, and hopefully for years to come.
Is it reasonable that Chad could make it back this year and has a bullpen role probably the most likely for him?
Yeah, we're early in the throwing program, as we've talked so many times, each day of the injury recovery and the rehabilitation and then the back to baseball will dictate where we ultimately can get to. But it is reasonable to think that if the throwing program goes well, that we could see Chad again this year. But it's so early in the throwing program that it's tough to truly give a prediction on that.
You know, I know this is way outside the box, but considering he has multiple plus pitches, and especially a changeup, would you ever consider switching Vasquez to the rotation? I mean, I know he's been great as a closer.
Yeah, and it's that challenge that anytime you have a reliever that has a ton of success and he does have multiple pitches, the thought about pushing him back into the rotation, and we've had that conversation in the past when we acquired Felipe, as we were acquiring Felipe, does he have the arsenal? Does he have the efficiency? Does he have the weapons to succeed as a starting pitcher? And there have been some guys that have had success moving from the back end of a pen to a rotation. There's also been a large number of guys that have broken down or have struggled, and so it's a delicate question. At this point, we are very comfortable that Felipe is one of the best relievers in baseball, and he's very comfortable that he's one of the best relievers in baseball, and I would not anticipate having a conversation about moving him into the rotation as established he is. As much as we talked about the workload, trying to get him from 60, 70 games and 65 to 75 innings to 200 innings, which is why you do it, to move him to 150-inning starter probably doesn't make as much sense. If he's going to give us 5 innings every time out, to know that we've got, or to feel that we've got a lockdown guy to close out wins, those are valuable. We're not of the mindset that anybody can close a game. There are guys that are very successful in the 8th inning and struggle in the 9th. We've got a guy that's very successful in the 9th and is very comfortable there and is where he wants to be. And so those are all part of the equation.
Who do you see as the impact being of the new rules regarding Latin American amateurs being able to access the team facilities earlier, being able to pay for travel earlier? What impact do you think that'll have?
Well, it allows us to have our development staff, our strength and conditioning coaches, our medical staff, to have access to those players on a more frequent, more consistent basis. So that should help the development curve versus signing, agreeing to terms with a player and then really not being able to have access to him. You're relying on others. We would like there to be more access, but we'll take this baby step and are very pleased with this baby step to be able to get our staff around the players that we've agreed to terms with and to be able to get them on our program as quickly as possible, to be able to earn their trust, to be able to earn their respect, to be able to understand what makes them tick. The more time we can have with them, the quicker, the easier that process is going to go.
What Kramer's been able to accomplish this year at AAA is, are you seeing the same swing that he had last year in AA when he was healthy? You know, the adjustment he made, is there a continuation there?
Yeah, I know our guys are thrilled with what Kevin Kramer's done offensively in terms of hitting the ball hard, hitting the ball for extra base hits, some home runs, but continuing to be a good hitter that can battle with two strikes, that can get his hits with two strikes. He's continuing to work defensively. He's bounced between second and third. Again, as we're finding ways for guys to make clubs, not turning them into utility players, but how do they make a major league team? Well, if he can play second, third, left-handed bat off the bench, as Jordy did, as Josh did, as Gong did, as several guys have done, they transition in roles and they take the regular job. We certainly feel Kevin Kramer has the ability to do that, and he will be in that mix for us as we go forward. be it this September or next year for sure.
Encouraged by the way Brian Reynolds is hitting double A, especially coming over a new organization and hitting the way, especially with a hamate injury, the progress he's made.
Yeah, the hamate typically saps power. Now for Brian, it was the bottom hand on his right-handed swing, so we've protected him a little bit there. But still, to lose time in the middle of a season, as we've seen repeatedly at the major league level, when a guy misses 10 days, he doesn't just pick right back up where he left off. Typically, there's a struggle there. There's a readaptation, adaptation period. So in Brian's case, to miss 4 to 6 weeks and then to come back out and he's swinging the bat very well, he's moving well athletically, and we're very pleased with where he is, and think the power is going to continue to develop, but also believe we've got a young man that's a good hitter that can do both.